Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino. On this episode, we talk with writer and published author Amy L. Bernstein. She writes stories that let readers feel while making them think. Her novels include The Potrero Complex, the award-winning The Night Hawkers, Dreams of Song Times, and Fran, The Second Time Around. Amy is an award-winning journalist, speechwriter, playwright, and certified nonfiction book coach. She also teaches workshops on various aspects of the craft of writing. She loves inspiring others to unlock their inner artist and explore all aspects of writing, publishing, and taking creative risks every day. Enjoy this interview.
Here.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
Good. Here, wait. I'm coming on. I had to change my, adjust my background here.
There we are. Great. Hey,
Joe. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Great to meet you. Where are you coming out of?
Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh, right on. Baltimore.
What about you?
I'm in Kansas City.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, hey, before we dive into your life as a writer and an author, what I want to know is, how did you survive COVID? How did you get through that 3-year time period, and how has it changed you?
It's funny. I feel like COVID is back on the we're discussing it again. I've been discussing it recently, wishing I didn't have to. I got COVID months and months and months before there was a vaccine. So I'm sort of like OG, like I got original COVID. And I was in a cabin in Vermont when I got sick, and I was, not near a hospital. And on the one hand, I was incredibly lucky. I was also scared because at that point, we heard so many horror stories. I came through it in about 5 days. It was not a pleasant experience, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And then I got it again. I don't know. I've already lost track. Probably a year. Yeah, like a year ago or so. And the irony is that I am at home at my computer alone 80 to 90% of the week. And I got it twice anyway.
Oh my. That is bizarre.
I know.
You know, it's weird. I just talked to somebody that never got it. And I'm like, wow. And their family didn't get it. So I'm thinking you guys are going to be test subjects in a couple of years. They're going to find you and test your DNA and see why.
I think many, many people who say they didn't get it actually did get it and didn't recognize it.
Like that could be.
They're like, oh, I had a bad cold last week, or, I really felt off for a couple of days there, or, well, I had the flu, but, in all of it, it was like COVID,
Yeah.
So.
That's true. It's not as definitive as winning the lottery, because if you hit that 1 billion, you either got it or you don't.
You're right. So what's your COVID story, since you asked?
I had two young, preteen teenagers in the house, and we drove and went out, saw nature sanctuaries. I actually got it in November, and I live with my mother-in-law, my wife, and her daughter, and they didn't get it. My son and I did. And we kind of quarantined and, did it that way. But we got it in November of 2020. And, I just thought I had allergies. I didn't really feel like anything major was going on. But, we were told that it was going to go through everybody. There was going to be herd immunity, whether we wanted it or not. Fauci said everybody's going to get this thing. So, it was just a matter of time. But so let's get to the true essence of what you do for a living. If you were in front of a bunch of third graders at a career day, and one of the kids looked up and said, hey, what do you do for a living? How do you answer them?
I love to tell stories. That's the start.
Yeah.
So, I write books, and I write essays, and I write poems. And so I use the English language to communicate with people on a whole bunch of different things.
So when you were in the third grade, what was your dream? What did you want to be when you grew up?
I'm pretty sure that if I thought about it at all, I wanted to be probably a writer or a teacher or something like that. Something with words, something with language, something with books.
Yeah. So you're doing exactly what you dreamed.
Well, I am, but as so many of us find, it was a long route in some ways to get here. I mean, I was a writer my entire professional career, but in the sense of writing, I was a journalist. I was an executive speech writer. I did a lot of work in corporate and government and nonprofit communication. So I was always writing, But I didn't call myself a writer because that seemed like a big privilege with a capital W. And then once I started writing plays and novels, I finally stepped into being able to say, okay, I'm officially a writer.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about your childhood. Where were you born and raised, and how did these seeds of loving stories and telling them come into you?
You know, I don't really, I think it's always these origin stories are sort of a mystery. I will start by saying that, well, my parents were born and raised in New Jersey, and although I was born in New Jersey and started life there, we moved around up and down the East Coast bunch. So I kind of lived in a bunch of different states. By the time I went off to college, my father was making corporate moves, and you know, obviously where he went, we went. So Connecticut and New Jersey and Pennsylvania and Massachusetts, and kind of all crammed into, you know, my childhood. But my mom had unrealized ambitions as a writer or a journalist. And, you know, back in the day, you know, she dropped out of college and got married really young, started a family really young, and she didn't pursue those dreams. And I think she had notebooks that she stuck away in drawers with scribbles in them that no one ever really saw or found. It's kind of like a rumor. So she wanted to do that, but she didn't do it. And I think somehow, you know, came down through the blood. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it manifested. What was the first book you ever read that really was kind of a gateway, either made you want to read more or write one day?
Well, I'm sure I can't remember the earliest ones, because I think I probably fell in love with, you know, whatever the literature of my early childhood was. I know there were a lot of great books, you know, in the early 60s and so forth. But I do remember probably by around fourth or fifth grade, I remember that I read Harriet the Spy and A Wrinkle in Time probably almost without stopping to breathe or eat. I was definitely a bookworm kind of kid back when that kind of thing was, believe it or not, still fairly common. I know my mom took us to the library a lot, so we always had books in the house, and she definitely encouraged us to read for pleasure, which we did.
What was the first thing that you wrote where you're like, man, I've arrived. This is my thing. This is me. I'm proud of this. Let's go.
Well, actually, in college, we had an assignment to write some kind of an essay, and it had to be in the style of some older famous writer. I can't remember we were told specifically that we had to sound like Samuel Johnson, who was a famous 18th century kind of writer and you know, man about town and chronicler of the day. And so I remember I wrote an essay that was something about the evils of television or something. And back in those days in England, they capitalized a lot of their nouns. So practically every other word just started with a capital letter because that's the way they did it. And it made it humorous. Anyway, I wrote this essay. I had so much fun doing it. And then a friend at college said to me, you know, because he was in a different section of the same course, I guess, or something. He's, you know, the professor read your essay out loud to all of us. And I was like, What? You didn't tell me.
Right. Wow. That's a pretty big deal.
I know.
So talk to me a little bit about heroes. Who've been heroes for you?
Well, that's a really interesting question. Heroes. Honestly, I don't know if I can single out certain specific people, because for me, it's about certain traits in a lot of different people. It's people who are empathetic and passionate and tolerant and sort of conduct themselves with dignity but also are thoughtful and incredibly creative. So that describes a lot of different people in a lot of different walks of life. I mean, somebody like Gloria Steinem, she's really an extraordinary human being, because still at the age of 90 or so, she's still really, really thoughtful, about issues that matter to a lot of people, matter to a lot of women. And she's really been true to herself, you know, for going on a century. So I really respect people. I look up to people who are very, you know, sort of true to their convictions. So that's a broad answer, but that's easier for me than like singling out a person.
I've never understood why Gloria's gotten a hard time. It just defies logic. It's like giving Rosa Parks a hard time. Like, what are you doing? Like, I've never understood that. Right?
Nope. Misogyny, you know.
Right. I get it. You know, get it. I get the evil human born viruses that make things happen like that. But at the end of the day, there's really nothing that she did but try to advance and help people understand and help women, which right now women are under fire from the government. You can't get health care. There, all these things are shutting down. Sure. Like what she did is more important now than it ever has been before.
For sure, Joe. And of course, I love hearing you say that because, you know, when a podcast host and a guest meet up for the first time, we don't know each other's politics. You know, I never know what I'm going to say that somebody else is going to say. Oh boy, we do not have a meeting of the minds here. But you know, I mean, the larger point is that, I mean, the people who are heroes to me are people who really have really tried to kind of make a difference and really kind of stuck with it. They're not just grandstanding, but they've really lived their beliefs. Yeah. You know, I like to think of myself as someone who quote unquote gives back, but you know, I don't have the, you know, kind of as a quasi introverted writer type. I'm not out there in the streets so much. I've done my share of protesting, but that's hardly leading change, you know, so I really respect people who do that.
Yeah, for sure. If you can meet anybody alive on the planet right now and spend some time with them, someone that you really admire, who would it be?
Oh, wow. I wish I had a quick answer for that, because I know after we hang up, I will tell you who that is.
It happens every time.
I used to have a very quick, half-serious answer that. I used to say Barbara Streisand because I loved her music and she's also passionate about politics. But honestly, it's really not Barbara Streisand. I mean, that could be fun, but that she's not the one. Who would it be? That is such a good question. And, it might pop into my mind, in a bit. And I probably can't tell you, this very second, which.
That's fine. That's fine. For some reason, when you said Barbara Streisand, I had a memory. In the late 90s, I used to work for a home health consulting firm, and we did trade shows, and we were in West Hollywood, and I was with an old hippie, and we were, I don't know where we were at, maybe going to Universal Studios or something, and we were waiting in front of a hotel, and she was like, oh my God, that's the guy that wrote Me and My Bobby McGee, and here comes Kris Kristofferson. He comes out. He hops in a Jeep, and the Jeep, I will never forget, said, I love gorillas, was the bumper sticker, and they just drove off. And I was like,
that's funny.
That was my one encounter. But so
I know what he looked like, but I don't know that I'd recognize him on the street per se, you know?
Yeah, you know, he's changed a lot over the years, but at that point, it was Kris Kristofferson, like, without a doubt. So let me ask you this. You know, everyone... We all have these motivations that get us up in the morning, that get us to do what we want to do, accomplish what we want to get done. What is that for you? What is your spark? What is your fire to do what you do and to write and create?
There's no question that because it's really me and my computer sort of day in and day out. I mean, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm on tons of Zoom meetings. So I'm quote unquote seeing other people, but there's no question that I have a compulsion. And I think this is true for most people who really write a lot. I have a compulsion to make sense of the world by writing about it in some fashion. I just have to. I'm in the middle now. I'm in the second day of working on an essay now. And it's just that struggle to like, what am I really trying to say? What is the best way to say it? And how do I really connect with people? I'm doing a lot of mentoring and training now as well, and teaching a lot of workshops. And that's all part of the same. It's really all part of the same thing. It's that need to sort of connect, to share and communicate information, to get those connections with people where we're kind of learning and seeing and experiencing the world together. So that's really what it is. It's about connecting and sort of thinking together in some ways.
What's been your best fan letter you've ever gotten?
Maybe a couple of my book reviews. Would I have to qualify as fan letters? I wish I could say I have real fan letters.
No. That's great.
Well, like last year, I had a book that came out I'm losing track of years. I guess it was summer of 2022. So a year ago. And, or maybe it was summer 20, or never mind. Anyway, somebody said this was my favorite book of the year. And like one, now only one person said that, right? Out of the entire universe. But that's okay. That was like, wow, I wrote your favorite book of the year. And she said, it was just so great. It was this, it was, I was like, that's it. Terrific. You made my week. You made my month. So yeah, I mean, you know, good feedback is greatly, greatly appreciated.
You know, everybody I talk to, when we think about like the last 3 years, it's like a big melting clock. Like we need to like come up with some graphic of like the Dali melting clock that just says COVID, because everything was just a blur. Like it's hard to keep up
yes.
with what year was what.
It is. Time still feels really skewed. And I think we all have those conversations where we had a whole, we lost 18 to 24 months. So we'll go like, well, it might have been 2020. It might have been 2021. I'm not even sure. It could have been early 2022. It is. It's an incredible blur. It's very weird.
You know, it's funny because I remember when that year started, everybody kept saying, well, Barbara Walters get out in Times Square and say, this is 2020, you know, and everybody was all being cute and funny. And the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. We were getting ready for a big parade. Like everything in 2020 was like, all right, here we go. We got a new zero at the end of this year. Let's get into it. It's just so weird how fast it precipitated and got to where it got. So of all of the things that you've done and accomplished in your life, what are you the proudest of?
I think at the end of the day, I feel like part of me is supposed to say, you know, raising a daughter who's now a wonderful adult in the world. But that's not really my answer. That's wonderful. But really, I would say that it's learning how to write a book and tell a story that really connects with people. That matters to me so much. And, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to do well. And being able to manage all the rejection that comes along with doing that kind of work, but really sticking to it and getting it done, that I think that means a lot to me that I've been able to do that. Because if I can do that, I feel like I can do whatever I set my mind to.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's hard. So if you could witness one event in human history with your own eyes, go back in time and see it, what would you love to have seen happen?
Oh, this is something I really do think about. Part of me wants to be around, you know, Pompeii in, the year 79 when the, earthquake exploded, and to see what the society was like and how people, well, they didn't cope actually. It was so, they were devastated. Of course, there's something horrible about that, but there's also something unbelievably fascinating. Now, I don't want to be in harm's way. I want to be able to just like watch it. I would love to see the pyramids being built, how they dragged the stones. I would absolutely love to see how Stonehenge was built, because those stones supposedly came from very, very far away. How did they do that? How, and it took, you know, decades and decades and decades. So you can kind of see where I'm going. I have a thing for antiquity, but I also absolutely love sort of the Victorian and Edwardian period. And so, you know, to be around between 1880 and 1900, hanging around the streets of London or New York and really seeing what the world was like then, because I read so much literature from that period, that would be amazing. Yeah, there'd be a lot of things I'd single out. But of course, I have to stay out of harm's way. I have to be magical and invisible so I can just watch it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So let's say you have a dream tonight. You run into the 20-year-old version of yourself, and you could give that young version of you a piece of advice based on the wisdom you've gained in your life up to this point. What would you tell that young version of you?
That's also a wonderful question. And this is something I've given a great deal of thought to. I think what it really comes down to is you have got to find a way to believe in your value and your worth, and that the dreams that you have are worth pursuing. And that even if all the signs are to the contrary, you don't know enough, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, nobody wants you to do this, you really need to listen to that inner voice. And if it's calling you loudly, you need to follow it. I felt so discouraged so often and so quickly as a younger adult, and didn't stick to my guns enough on things that mattered a lot to me, or just to pursue them or take risks. And I think that it's really important to sort of tell that young person this, you should do this, and don't let anybody stop you from trying.
Yeah. So everyone out there has a perception of you, family, friends, fans, but you're the one in control. You live your life. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
I am a person who is never satisfied. No matter what I do, it's not enough. I'm not talking about what I have. I mean, it's what I do. It's never enough. I'm never as good as I want to be. I'm always looking for the next thing that I feel like I need to accomplish, and I'm worthless until I do that thing. So I'm incredibly driven, and I'm never satisfied. And so that makes me hard to live with me.
So if anyone wants to get your books, learn more about you, anything about your world, where can they go?
They should go to my website, amywrites.live. It's amywrites.live. And there they can find a lot of things that I'm up to. I teach a lot of writing courses, and I coach other writers who are trying to find their own path to publishing. And information on all my books is up there, and all those creative endeavors. And it's all kind of a one-stop shop.
Excellent. Amy, this has been wonderful. Thank you for opening up your world. It's been a fascinating run through it. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Joe. Your questions were phenomenal, and I wish I could have been quicker on the spot to answer some of them.
Oh, no. No, we got to contemplate. We got to get through it. So is the right way, is it Bernstein?
Yes.
I just want to make sure. Sometimes with the spelling, I can get thrown off, so I appreciate it. I have a lot of vowels in my name, so I try to be very careful.
Yeah, I understand that.
Amy, thank you. Best of luck with everything. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks for tuning in to another Famous Interview with Joe Domino, where we cover the world of art, literature, business, spirituality, music, and more from around the globe. Our esteemed theme music was composed and produced by the great E.E. Pointer of Kansas City's River Cow Orchestra. If you want to hear more interviews, visit the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino channel on YouTube. You can also find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and until next time.